Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. I'm joined today by Professor Andrea Vicini, a Jesuit who teaches at the Boston College School of Theology and Ministry. He's Associate Professor of Moral Theology. Welcome, Father Vicini.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here and look forward to our conversation on this topic.
Well, we're going to talk a bit about the BRAIN Initiative, which maybe not everybody has heard about, but is a really ambitious project launched by the Obama administration. Maybe you can describe it to our listeners.
Yes, on April the 2nd this year, President Barack Obama launched, as you said, the BRAIN Initiative. The acronym means Brain Research Through Advancing Innovative Neurotechnologies. And the acronym is quite well chosen, it seems to me, because the purpose of the initiative is to use all new technologies that can help us to achieve a greater knowledge of brain functioning. The ultimate purpose is to use this better knowledge of our brain for health purposes, to address specific diseases that are not well known in the way in which they affect the brain and ultimately human beings. We can mention diseases that cover the whole spectrum of brain activity, from schizophrenia to Alzheimer to the neurological implications of addiction, drug addiction, to epilepsy, just to have an idea of the variety and complexity of diseases.
Now, neuroscience, the field of neuroscience, what do we know right now about the brain? It sounds like, I mean, with all the Alzheimer's, schizophrenia, there's a lot of areas we don't know much about.
This is exactly true. In short, we can say we know very little about the brain. We know very little about the functioning of these 100 billion of neurons that compose our brain. We don't know exactly how brain activity emerges, and this is the purpose of the BRAIN Initiative. See how BRAIN Initiative emerges and situations in which brain activity is modified by specific diseases. I can give you an example. We thought that we had a tool that was helping us to discover brain functioning. We thought that the MRI, magnetic resonance imaging, a technique that gives us images of brain functioning, was helpful. It was modified and we created functional fMRI to see how the brain was performing. And we thought that this could help us to distinguish, for example, in situations where we have the need of assessing the degree of consciousness of the patients. Think, for example, of patients in a vegetative state or patients who are in a minimally conscious state. So patients in which we need to find out about their brain activity and see if we can relate that to their consciousness. And this will help us to make important decisions about how to help these patients. We thought that fMRI could help us in doing that, and we discovered that still is not a very reliable tool. We need better tools to, on the one hand, identify the brain activity, and secondly, relate it to degrees of consciousness. So for this reason, the expectations that we have for this new initiative that will help us to know more about normal brain functioning and brain functioning in the situation, in situations where there is a malfunctioning, when there is a disease, is enormous. And we look forward to these new technologies that will help, will give us tools to address, to achieve, to realize this study. There are five areas of technology that will be involved. The first one will be nanotechnology, because we need smaller tools. Nanotechnology is allowing us to create tools that are of the order of nanometers. Think of our a human hair is 60,000 nanometers. So very small tools that we can introduce in the brain, like nanoparticles or nanoprobes. Moreover, we need new ways of identifying brain activity, so bioelectronics, will help us in a wireless way, for example, to gather data. Genetics is the third area of research that will be involved, because we can create artificial DNA that will record neural activity. And then we can add synthetic biology, again, producing artificial DNA, and finally, computational advanced technologies. So these are the branches of new technologies that hopefully will help us to achieve the goal of knowing more about our brain.
So this is a very ambitious project. It sounds like Obama's Human Genome Project, which was under President Clinton. You know, as a bioethicist, what are some issues that you could bring to the fore that, you know, might be concerns or at least ethical questions about this initiative?
The President Obama is very much aware that we need to ask questions. So he invited the Presidential Commission for the Study of Bioethical Issues to give him a report on what are the ethical issues that need to be addressed. Personally, I would say that we need to reflect on what are we going to do with this new knowledge that we'll achieve about normal brain functioning, and what are we going to do with the possibility of curing diseases, finding new treatments, finding new way of stimulating the brain in order to have a healthy functioning. Are they going to be reserved only for those who can have access, let's say, in developed countries, or are they going to be available to everyone who is in need, even in developing countries? So the issue of access, it seems to me, is a key issue. Second, I would say an issue of vision. Who is going, what is the type of person we have in mind when we reflect on neurosciences, when we reflect on the possibilities neurosciences are offering us? So are we thinking about enhancing our capabilities, strengthening our ability to perform, for example, or are we thinking about going beyond this, let us call it positive enhancement? Are we thinking about transforming the human, as the philosophical group who is proposing transhumanism is advocating? The third ethical issue that I would indicate concerns pharmaceuticals. If we are going to have a greater knowledge of the brain and of brain diseases, probably we will develop drugs that will help us to treat diseases. Who is going to benefit of these drugs? Who is going to have access to these drugs? Will it be only for the wealthy or for all those who need to rely on these pharmaceuticals? Fourth, I would say, who is going to use the knowledge and the possibilities that the Brain Initiative will make available? Are they going to be available in a democratic society, so democratically, or are they going to be limited? And finally, federal money, a large amount of federal money, will be for this initiative. It is planned that in 15 years, that's a span, the time span of the project, will be probably $3 billion. Is it going to be, this federal money is given to universities and research labs related to universities, but it is taxpayers' money. Is there a way in which this money that the taxpayers spent, we can say, for this research is going to benefit them? So a question in this case will be an ethical evaluation of the social investment and the social return of these funds.
I think it's interesting, one of those points that you brought up, where questions about human personality and you know, how neurosciences influence human personality, and could that be used for you know, kind of questionable purposes? And there are some questions surrounding that too. I mean, when you're talking about the brain, you said it's a very mysterious, we don't know a lot. So there is some concern about, you know, what people might use this technology for.
Yes. One of the federal agencies involved in financing this, the Brain Initiative, is DARPA. That is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. It means that there is an agency interested in developing tools that ultimately will benefit military research. And DARPA is involved in a large number of projects that have dual purpose. So that they have, on the one hand, a purpose that concerns health, and on the other hand, a purpose that relates to military defense. We might want to reflect ethically on research that has dual purpose, because we want to be sure that in a transparent way we are aware of the ultimate goal of research that could be used for purposes that in a democratic society might be problematic. If we are thinking of creating the famous super soldier that is able to resist hard conditions in the battlefield. And we want to discuss, it seems to me, ethically, these possibilities and situations where the dual purpose can be unbalanced and lean more on the military side and less on the medical and medical benefits that we aim to achieve.
Now, that's a very good point. I mean, we're focused on the medical breakthroughs, and that's how often these projects are sold, is that we can really advance our understanding of these diseases. But less talked about are these other potential uses, and I think it's very good that you and other people are drawing attention to this. Now, perhaps you could talk a bit about your work at BC in bioethics and some of your colleagues and the other kinds of work they're involved in to raise these kind of questions.
I find it fascinating to work at Boston College with a very interesting group of colleagues, and their interests intersect what we just discussed. For example, Jim Keenan and Lisa Cale are interested in addressing questions about public health and the global repercussions of issues in public health. So they would ask questions concerning, as I mentioned before, who is going to benefit and how we are going to make the results available to everyone around the world, and how are these benefits going to promote global health. David Hollenbach is involved in human rights as a director of Center for Human Rights and International Policy at Boston College, and he would be part of any conversation that concerns health as a human right and the issues that are hindering us in promoting rights around the world. And in a more positive way, what are the strategies that they can propose and articulate to advance democracy around the world? John Paris is interested in issues concerning end of life, and he would look at imaging and technologies that help us to discern about consciousness at the end of human life, in the vegetative state and in minimally conscious state, or in traumatic brain injury and the needed ethical questions that we need to articulate to see which kind of treatment we can offer. Again, Jim Keenan, Lisa Cale, and Ken Himes are working on issues concerning moral decision making, and they would ask questions about what are the questions that we need to formulate within society when we think about research and funding for research for an extremely sophisticated research project. They would help us to provide answers to these questions, looking at virtues, looking at the history of Catholic social teaching, and the key points of resources that we can find in Catholic social teaching and in bioethics, Catholic bioethics. And finally, reflecting on technology, a colleague of mine, Steve Pope, is for the coming year, at Princeton, at the Center for Theological Inquiry at Princeton, working with an interdisciplinary group of colleagues on neuroscience. And I'm interested in, personally, in continuing to ask questions about all sorts of new technologies, from nanotechnology to cyber technology to synthetic biology. Within this set of broad concerns that are part of a holistic way of thinking about global health.
What are the venues for bioethicists to bring up these questions? Obviously, you have your journals and conferences, but I'm thinking of the President's Council on Bioethics and on this Brain Initiative. Is there a venue for you to be part of the conversation, or is it just scientists who are kind of deciding the path forward?
At the moment, the scientists are doing brainstorming concerning ways to move ahead and criteria to decide about research projects that will be part of this large initiative and how to decide which project should receive funding. Some of the scientists who proposed the Brain Initiative highlighted some of the issues that they think should be addressed from an ethical point of view. They mentioned the need to avoid harm, the need to protect privacy and confidentiality. But they did that on their own without engaging themselves in a conversation with ethicists. We mentioned earlier the Human Genome Project. The Human Genome Project, on the contrary, decided that there was need of allocating part of the funding for ethical reflection. So at the beginning, 3% and then 5% of the whole, overall, huge budget for the Human Genome Project was to address issues on ethical, legal, and social implications of the Human Genome Project. I look forward to see the report of the President's Commission for the Study of Bioethical Issues to see if they are proposing something similar. Personally, I think that this could stimulate ethical research. The other venues for ethical research, as you mentioned, are the classrooms. I engage in conversation with my students, publications, conferences, where ethicists exchange ideas. But ultimately, we need to find a way in which we can have an impact in society. So we should ask ourselves, it's fine to interact among ourselves and engage in a conversation, but what is the outcome of our ethical reflection in political terms within society? If you are really taking care of promoting the well-being of the citizens, how they are going to benefit of our exchange. And so we want really to have a concrete and practical impact within society to promote as much as possible research, but at the same time to reflect on other items that need to find the needed funding. So we need to keep funds for research within a broad agenda that will continue to promote public health and global health across boundaries in the world.
Professor Father Andrea Vicini from Boston College School of Theology and Ministry, thank you for bringing this subject to us, and I think it's worthy of further reflection. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I look forward to feedback from readers.
Yes, we invite our listeners to weigh in and to comment on this and to respond. So thanks very much.
Thank you.